Hello, mate. You're listening to the Human Magic Podcast, and my name's Jack Hutchcraft. I'm a musician and I'm a journalist, and I'm trying to use this podcast as a vehicle to try and work out what's going on out there, man. Trying to work out how to navigate this beautiful life. It's weird, but beautiful life, you know, by speaking to different people. Today I'm speaking about Islam and climate change. So this is a recording of when I interviewed Timothy Winter. So Timothy Winter is also known as Sheikh Abdel Hakim Murad, and he's an English Muslim scholar, researcher, writer, academic, and he's also the chair of trustees at Cambridge Mosque. Okay, this place is beautiful. It is the first eco-mosque in Europe, and that means, you know, it's all sustainable and it's really futuristic and cool. So I went there to do the interview. It was part of a feature that I was writing about Islam and climate change, which is on theface.com. What do religions think of climate change? So you can read that if you'd like. It's interviews with, you know, with priests, with Hindu scholars, with Buddhist monks and people from different religions about what's going on with climate change. Is it, you know, is it prophesied? Is it punishment? Is it even real? What's going on? So this is a particularly, I really enjoyed this short talk with Timothy Winter, because I found him really erudite and really insightful and quite poetic in the way that he spoke. I've got not much more to say. I'm going to let the conversation speak for itself. Okay, so could you introduce yourself and tell me your position here, please?
Yep, I'm Tim Winter. I'm the chair of trustees of the new Cambridge Mosque.
Okay, so can you tell me in brief, what is the Islamic view on our relationship with the earth and all things on it?
Yeah. Well, the Quran emphasizes again and again the human belongingness to the natural order, obviously as possessors of a certain type of intelligence and a capacity to conceptualize truth and values. We are separate from the other species. But in our essential perceptions of the world, our emotional life, our experience of pain, pleasure, our need for sustenance, for sex, our fear of death, we are very much part of the order of creation generally. And the Quran is constantly calling our attention to that. It's really its only argument for the existence of God. Look around and see the rising, the setting of the sun, the succession of night and day, the way that animals have been created, and also emphasizes the fact that all of creation is engaged in an act of what we call cosmic praise. So it says, there is no beast that crawls upon the earth, nor any bird that flies with its wings, but that they are nations like yourselves. And this incorporates the what we vaguely call spiritual life. So everything in creation is, in its particular way, giving thanks and praise to the Almighty, the one source of multiplicity of everything. And therefore, the human function is to exist in harmony with that, but also to act as an appropriate custodian where necessary, something that other species aren't able to do because of the lack of a conceptual or moral framework. So there are many stories about the founder of Islam, the Prophet Muhammad, which show him communicating with animals, and every Muslim child is kind of brought up with these stories, about how, for instance, once he passed by a field in his city of Medina, and some people were gathered outside it, and there was a camel that was running amok, a big, dangerous, frantic animal, and they said, "Don't go in, messenger of God, the camel's dangerous." But he goes in and he looks at it, and he puts his hand on the creature's snout, looks into its eyes, and the creature calms down. He comes out, everybody's amazed, and he explains, "This animal told me that its owner has maltreated it, has given it too little to eat and too much to carry. Mm-hmm. And the owner comes up in tears and said, it's true, a messenger of God. And the camel, as it were, goes into early retirement and is treated well for the rest of its days. And there are many, many stories in which the founder of Islam emphasizes our belongingness to the natural order and also our responsibility before God to be kind to the creatures and also to the vegetal kingdom. You can't just uproot a tree or cut down plants without due reason. You can't hunt unless you're going to actually eat, and you need to eat that which you are hunting. So blood sports are forbidden in traditional Islamic ethics. So it's very much a green vision, and as such is in harmony, no doubt, with many of the other world sacred traditions, which have stressed a humility in the face of the majesty of nature and the need to coexist with it rather than to try and dominate and subjugate it. It's also the case, I think, that the religions generally prefer a kind of abstemious, non-materialistic outlook. And here Islam is not unique, but generally, man not living by bread alone is a kind of slogan, I think, for all of the world religions, something that unites them. That the problem of the global climate emergency is the result not so much of too many people, but of too much desire. People are greedy for more stuff. Everybody wants the latest phone and chuck away last year's model. Everybody wants to take gas-guzzling holidays in remote places. Everybody wants the throwaway fast food culture. So the problem of global warming really is the result of humanity's abandonment of a traditional sense of enough is enough. Focus on the spiritual life, focus on your neighbours, focus on good works, focus on family. And the consequence of, as the corollary of that, just focusing on pleasures that need an enormous and environmentally very destructive infrastructure in order to supply them. Mm. So we see this from two angles. Firstly, that nature is not just there for us to quarry and mine and gobble, but is part of God's bountiful creation that has its own integrity, irrespective of man's needs, and is testifying to the truth and beauty of God at all times. And therefore, nature is sacred and to be revered, as well as just to be protected and conserved. But also that human desires are limitless, as we all know, but the world's resources are finite. And so the current model of capitalistic, global, eternal growth, which assumes that with each new generation we find new and swankier methods of gobbling up the world's finite resources, and there are more and more developing countries that want to jump on the same bandwagon, is an unsustainable model and needs to be replaced by the kind of balanced, renunciatory outlook which I think all of the world religions share.
Yeah. So, do you think, with that in mind, do you think that spirituality could help save the human race from extinction? Mm-hmm.
I think a common perception amongst minority religions in England when they look at something like, say, Extinction Rebellion, is that it tends to be ethnically not very diverse and also not terribly interested in the idea of reverence for creation. So they're sometimes called in the Muslim community the flat whites. So they see the world as kind of horizontal without a vertical dimension. And also it tends to be quite sort of middle-class, Hampstead, do-gooder types rather than people who come from some of the more marginal groups in society. Yeah. It sometimes looks a little bit elitist, which I think is unfortunate because, of course, we all face the same climate emergency.
Yeah.
Nobody's in a position to escape from it. That I think, has impeded a substantial Muslim entrance into the mainstream world of climate activism, which is regrettable because the problem of the environment is not separable from the problem of the decline of religion and spirituality. We're so greedy now because we're no longer interested in moderation or restraint in the traditional, say, monastic view of taking very little from the world, yeah, is unimaginable to us. We're hedonists, we're greedy, we're materialistic, we like more holidays, we like bigger cars, we like more stuff, because that's all that's left to us.
Yeah.
So I think that religion has probably a more radical but also more real response to the problem of the global climate emergency than a standard secular approach ever could have, because religions marshal very strong resources for not over-consuming, which in a secular context may not make so much sense except in a sort of pragmatic, utilitarian sense.
Yeah, yeah. So what would happen, because what they're talking about is, like you said, it's a crisis that affects absolutely everybody. Yep. No one can escape from it. If things were to continue as they are, and we'd be facing possible extinction, in perhaps in the far future, but still a possibility, would that be allowed to? Would that be allowed to happen? Or would God intervene?
Well, the Quran, like other monotheistic scriptures, speaks of an end time scenario. Mm-hmm. When things are degenerating and coming to an end. One of the predicted features of that is extreme materialism and the forgetfulness of the life of the spirit, but also environmental disruption, the veiling of the sun, the earth giving up its burdens. There's a sense in which the natural order, as well as the human order, is disrupted at that time. And as a result, some Muslims of a kind of end time orientation like to see climate change and the despoiling of finite resources as an indication that the end is nigh, and that there will be the final trump, the judgment, heaven and hell just around the corner. That's not my perspective particularly, nor necessarily that of most Muslims, but there is a sense in which the monotheistic timetable does not envisage the world continuing indefinitely, but there will be, as it were, a kind of human, moral, spiritual, aesthetic entropy as people sink more and more into the impulses of their bodies and listen less and less to the impulses of their souls. And when that process becomes apparently irretrievable, then there will be a divine intervention of some kind. You know, the Hindus have a similar idea, the idea of the wheel of samsara and the appearance of a new saviour figure, yeah, who will reinitiate an age of gold after an age of iron. So it's something I think that's shared by most world religions. Whether we're in those end times at the moment, and whether the depletion of the ozone layer is really a sign that God is so angry with us for, as it were, not paying the rent on the planet, that he's going to lose patience and just shut everything down because there's no point to our species any longer, is up to the divine wisdom. I don't think we can second guess that.
Okay, I understand. God, I forgot my question. So I mean, obviously, this might not be for you to say, but why? Climate crisis has thrown up a lot of philosophical questions for me. Mm-hmm. One of which is, why do we have these bodies in this carnal existence? Mm-hmm. What is a traditional Muslim view of why we're here? Because, mm-hmm, in a way, I've been battling with feelings of even nihilism and hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Really. Well, we seem to be a burden on this earth.
Yeah.
So why have we been given this life here?
Because for 99% of the history of our species, we were not a burden on the earth, but existed as part of a sustainable ecosystem. It's only the last 50 years or so when our greed, which is largely the result of our turning our backs on the life of the spirit, has turned us into a kind of global pestilence. For the first time, a species out of the millions of species that exist and have existed, a species emerges that turns out not to be in balance with everything else, but actually a disruptor and a kind of infection on the planet that threatens to kill the entire organism. That, of course, is a source of considerable anxiety and depression for many people. But one of the things, again, that the world religious traditions all emphasize is that the ultimate nature of reality is pure compassion. It's bliss, it's God's mercy, it's God is love. And that it is not the purpose of the fundamental source of our being, that everything should just fizzle out in a kind of suffocating, dark misery. So we have that hope, and that's one reason why religiosity is associated with comparatively positive mental health outcomes, for instance, that people do have that hope. Mm-hmm. But of course, religion also simultaneously insists on the importance of repentance, metanoia, recognizing guiltily that one has sinned against God, and sinning against his creation is certainly a grave sin against God, and that therefore in this emergency the religions really should be leading the charge for a global shift in perception away from materialism and greed and towards a more reverent and humble acceptance of our place in God's world. And my hope is that the religions can actually combine their resources in doing this, because just as humanity has its back up against the same wall confronting climate change, similarly, the religions, I think, all have very positive resources for turning humans away from materialism, hedonism, the pursuit of empty pleasures, towards something more beautiful, more meaningful, more family-oriented, more neighbour-oriented, more animal-oriented. I think that's something that, that should unite us.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay, hope you can.
So thank you for listening. That was my talk about Islam and climate change. I really enjoyed speaking to Timothy Winter. I especially liked when he said, I've got it written down, the quote that I like: "We have humility in the face of the majesty of nature and the need to coexist with it rather than dominate or subjugate it. Nature is part of God's bountiful creation that has its own integrity, irrespective of man's needs." And, you know, I'm not a Muslim. I don't follow Islamic scriptures, but I did think the way that he put that was quite powerful. Thanks for listening. You can get me on Twitter if you want, at JAK_TH. Say hello, give me some suggestions, share your ideas about this talk. Yeah, and I guess let's look after each other and look after this beautiful planet Earth that we're stuck on for a little while. Cheers.